This is Jason Albert, and you are listening to Nordic Nation from Faster Skier. He is proudly Alaskan and has resisted the temptation over the years to migrate elsewhere. We are talking about 29-year-old Reese Hanneman, who has in fact migrated from his hometown of Fairbanks to Anchorage, Alaska. So the question has really been, is Reese Hanneman retired? We'll get the answer in this episode and learn about his creative endeavors as the founder of the Ophira Group, a creative PR agency based in Anchorage.
I mean, I guess there's a lot. There's probably many stories, I guess, within here. But, I never announced my retirement or anything. I didn't. So, you know, I guess I had a lot of people texting me when I, you know, wasn't in West Yellowstone. After last season, I have been skiing professionally for, I would call it 8 years now. Raced on the World Cup, almost all of those years, to some degree. And so, spending a lot of time in Europe, racing World Cup and Super Tour and, winning, you know, I won, 5 national titles, I guess. So, it was awesome, but I had put a lot of other things, you know, on the extreme back burner, basically, you know, I mean, to compete at the World Cup level and to compete at the Olympic level, it requires basically everything you have and all of your time and resources and energy. And, it was awesome, but, there's just a lot of other things I want to do, you know, skiing, has been a big part of my life, but it's not my life. So, this year I'm just kind of broadening my horizons a little bit. And, I'm still competing and, training and, but it's just a lot more flexible schedule than I have done in the past. So
can you describe a little bit about how you decided to stay on for another Olympic cycle?
5 years ago now, 2014, you know, I had an outside chance to make the Olympic team for Sochi. I podiumed. I was on the podium 3 out of 3 races at nationals. I won a national title in the skate sprint, classic sprint, excuse me. And, and the criteria were different back then. And so I thought I was going to make the team, you know, after those performances, and I didn't make the team. And they didn't fill the quota that year. They had 9 and they took 7. So, you probably remember that. So there were a couple of us who, you know, felt like we had gotten, you know, had basically done what we needed to do to get on the team and didn't make the team. So at that point I had to decide what I, you know, what it meant to me. What was I doing? You know, why? And I've skied for so long and it's been awesome. And I've competed all over the world and raced a lot of World Cup, even, you know, up to that point, I'd raced quite a few World Cups and traveled all over. And, you know, you have to just think about what am I doing this for? Is this making me happy? Is this making me fulfilled as a person? Does it still inspire me? You know, am I just kind of chasing after something that's just empty? So I didn't know at that point. So I decided to take it year by year. I believed that I could still get better as a skier, that I had to reach my full potential. And so that, to me, that was a big factor in continuing, was I was not going to be able to continue if I didn't think I could get better. So, and I knew I could get better. So I took it year by year. And I kind of went up and down. I had some awesome races. You know, I won a lot of Super Tours and, went to the World Cup. I always didn't qualify for world championships. So like every other year, that was kind of tough. And that would be, it would kind of set me back. And I think, man, am I just doing this to try to like just make this team? Is that the only thing that's going to make me happy? You know, I mean, do I enjoy this anymore? And so you just kind of go through a lot of deep, you know, reflection. And I think that's all the time when you're an athlete, because it's so hard and, you know, you're making no money and it's a pretty, in so many ways, it's a pretty dumb thing to do, but it still has that draw to it. And so you're doing it and you're trying to figure out, you know, why are you doing it? I mean, why are you doing it? Yeah, I took it year by year, and then coming into the Korea Olympics, so like season, like 2016, you know, I was doing pretty well and I was, you know, one of the top sprinters in the country. And I knew that, you know, I knew that I had a chance to achieve the goal that had been up there, you know, that I had been, that had been my moonshot goal my whole life since I was, you know, 6 years old or something. And so at that point I just said, you know, I'm going all in. I'm putting, and I had learned a lot. I mean, I was, you know, 26 years old at that point. So I had a lot of experience. So it wasn't anything crazy. Yeah. So, I mean, and I was able to put it together and I trained, you know, I took all of my experience of overtraining and undertraining and training too hard and training too easy and all these complex things. And, you know, my team with the APU team and my coach, Eric, I would say that was the first time that I really got it right, like for an entire, like a whole season almost, you know? So, which is, you know, and that's really hard to do. I think it takes a long time to really, you can really feel like you got it right. So, yeah, I was just happy to be able to put it together last year, and I performed, you know, really well when I needed to. And I proved that I belonged on that team. So for me, that was kind of like, that was kind of a big factor. A big part of it was just like proving just even to myself that I belonged there. I guess to answer your question, yeah, it becomes part of you. It becomes who you are because of, you're spending all of your waking moments, you know. I mean, my life had been dominated by ski racing and what it takes to be at that level. And, you know, your family is sacrificing. I'd gotten married in the meantime. So, you know, your wife is sacrificing and you're gone all the time, all winter. You're at training camps. You're on the glacier. You know, we basically lived over FaceTime together. Yeah, you know, you're making no money and you're getting, you know, every year you add another year to your age and you're not getting any closer to being able to provide for a family or, you know, things like that. Just things that life will require of you at some point. And so, yeah, I mean, to be honest, that gave me a big sense of like almost urgency, just, you know, that I didn't have time to mess around anymore. You know, you're not just, it's no longer living the dream. It's like, you're there because you have a pretty specific focus. And, yeah, but then obviously balancing that with a love of it and a love of training that hard, you know, and a love of competing and getting in the zone and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's definitely balanced.
How much younger is your brother?
He is like 3.5 years younger. He's 3 years younger, skiing wise. So,
like, what kind of advice do you give him at this point, or do you kind of steer clear of that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we've being brothers, you know, that are competing head to head for often the same spots, like at the World Cup or at the Olympics. Competing against each other, and we're also training partners. We've been training partners on the APU team for years now, and then obviously way, way, way beyond that, way past that, back into childhood, you know, since we were tiny. So yeah, it's this weird like competitor brother / teammate / best fan, you know, relationship. So it's pretty complex, I guess I would say. Nowadays, I mean, yeah, he's killing it. I honestly think, I always have known he has more potential than me. He's a freak. I mean, he's the only, I mean, he has, what, 14 junior national titles, you know? I mean, that's, to me, that proves kind of like where, what the potential is. So, yeah, he's a beast. I mean, I think that he has the potential to be our top sprinter. So, I have more experience, of course. And so I try to give him advice that he will listen to, I guess.
Yeah, right.
I'll put it that way. Because, you know, he also likes to do things his own way, and we kind of have always had a little bit of that competitive edge kind of against each other. But I think it's going to be a lot more fun. I don't know. It's going to be a lot, not more fun, but it'll be different now that I'm not necessarily competing for those same spots against him, because I try to give him advice, you know, to motivate him and to help him enjoy it and to just help him save time, you know, where I wasted a year or two here or there trying to figure something out, you know. If I can take that time out of, you know, he can eliminate that wasted time from his career or anybody else's career. You know, I like to coach, and I kind of advise a number of our younger skiers, including a couple that were at, you know, Junior Worlds and stuff this year, and just seeing them progress and trying to pass on the stuff that I've learned in a meaningful way, you know, like stuff that you can only learn by, you know, getting your tail handed to you at the World Cup 30 times, you know, so... Yeah.
What is, you know, you mentioned that you felt like last year, you know, in the run up to what we'll call it, you know, the 9 to 10 months running up to Pyeongchang, that you got that year right. Without kind of poring over logs in our conversation, you know, what was it that you felt was right for you? Like what maybe did you do that things just clicked? And, you know, there wasn't that lost month or whatever it was that you were able to sustain the fitness and qualify and ski at the Olympics.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess going into that training year, into the 2017-18 season, so starting in May for that 2017. Yeah, I mean, I was basically laser focused on sprint qualifying. And I have always been a weak qualifier. I qualify low and finish very high in the heats. And I always improve from my qualifier to my heat finish. I knew that I needed, you know, like basically my career was coming down to qualifying. And I knew I was fast. I mean, I know I can qualify top 10 or top 5 pretty much, you know, on any day, but I needed to be first, you know, and that's, so yeah, I had that in mind, and I had built up a huge bank of hours and fitness, you know, the 10 years or 15 years prior to that. So more than just like numbers and workouts and stuff like that, I think I really felt for the first time that I knew exactly what I needed to do. And I really believed in it, you know, instead of looking for other things from other people or trying to compare yourself. And I think there's times for that where you want to learn, you want to be a sponge and absorb things from people who are better than you. And I think that's really important when you're young to see all the different ways to do it, you know, and there's so many different ways to do it, but yeah, so I think over whatever 8 years of skiing kind of at a relatively high level that I had finally kind of gotten to the point where I could make a plan and I could craft a training regimen and the timing of things and that I knew would work best for me. And probably the most important thing is just believing in that. You know, I honestly... My hindsight in my career is like, I don't think the specifics matter nearly as much as like how you approach them and how you believe in them. So I want to write a book, but I think that I could probably write whole separate articles or whole separate interviews about this, but I think people get way too wrapped up in the details of training, like how many minutes of recovery or how many minutes at a certain level or whatever. Because I've tried all of that. I've done all of that, and I don't think that matters so much. I think it's more like broad. It's very broad, you know, how high a quality you're doing and how long you can do that for and if you enjoy it and if you believe in yourself. I think those are like maybe the four big factors. So I think for me that all came together last year. And of course there's a lot of specifics that do go into it and timing and all the details. But so that was cool to make that happen, I guess.
Well, how would you describe, like, if you had four words to describe Eric Flora, who you've worked, I think you worked with him through, you know, the 8 years that you were skiing at the pro level. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I moved here to Anchorage. I moved from Fairbanks to Anchorage, in 2010. And I'd had a really awesome coach, my coach Bill in Fairbanks before that for a number of years, who really lit the fire and showed me what was possible. And he showed me that value of belief and just super hard training. And then when I moved here to Anchorage, I joined up with Flora, and so he's amazing. He's once in a lifetime coach.
Not that I don't believe you at all. I just, I'm going to flesh that out. Like, what?
Yeah.
What are the things that make him a once in a lifetime coach, at least for you or from your perspective?
I mean, the most obvious, I think, is that he, it's kind of becoming a cliche, and you hear it in other sports, but there's no doubt in my mind that he outworks every other coach that I've ever seen. I mean, it's borderline unhealthy. I mean, it's not even borderline unhealthy. It's probably just straight up unhealthy. And I mean that in a loving way. And I would tell that to him. And I,
no, right.
Even
right.
As his athlete who appreciates the just insane amount of time and effort he puts into his athletes, each one, I was still concerned for him. You know, I was like, man, like, you got to take a week off or something, you know, like go on vacation and you know, he enjoys it. He enjoys coaching. He enjoys skiing. And he works so hard, and it's crazy. It's super, it's motivating because he's out. Yeah. He's just working so hard.
I have lots of, or several layers of questions. So first off, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you were doing there, when you were there and what you were doing in China.
So, every year they have a Tour de Ski China, which is put on by an organization called Nordic Ways. And I'd heard about it. I had friends and some teammates that had gone on this trip before to China. So, and my basic understanding beforehand was that, you know, they were trying to put on some races, kind of build the skiing culture in China. And they, you know, invited international athletes to come and compete. And so this year, you know, I've gone to nationals, like, I don't know how many million years straight since high school. And so, it's always during nationals. So I said, yeah, I'd love to go to China. And, you know, I mean, skiing, you get a lot of opportunities to travel. But you inevitably, if you ski for a while and you compete a lot, you end up traveling to the same places over and over again, which is cool. But, you know, China is like the Far East, right? And I'd never been there. And, seemed like an awesome experience. I had heard good things. So, So anyway, I got invited to go and, was able to go over there. They have a tour de ski that always ends with the Vasalapa China, which is part of the World Lapa series. And so other than that, I really didn't know much when I headed over there. So,
and well, how did the racing go for you?
It was good. It went well, actually. I mean, I've been busy this summer and this fall with things outside of skiing, and so I've been training. I've had very focused training, I would say. Not a lot of hours, but I try to ski well, and I try to train hard, and I'm trying to do intensity I do a lot more intensity as a percentage of my training now. So I was kind of just thinking about China and knowing that there'd be some good competition there, and I wanted to do well. So the racing went really well in China. I would say I didn't know what to expect, but I was surprised with the level of competition. I mean, there were quite a few. I mean, I would say it's quite a few pretty fast guys, and the guys who were like. The guy who won the sprint, the Chinese guy, I mean, I was extremely impressed. I probably at the same speed, if a similar speed to where I was last year, you know, this guy was just lighting me up. So yeah, there's some fast skiers over there in China. It was cool to see their juniors and kind of their whole development team, and it looks like they're coming along. So it's kind of cool to see, you know, Nordic being expanded beyond just Scandinavia.
Yeah. Did you notice? So one of the things that's been really, and it's on my, you know, I keep like a whiteboard for stories and like, you know, a couple of digital folders, and several of them have, you know, like China themes or China threads, because, you know, you'll get a press release here or there that,
yeah,
you know, there's a Norwegian coach going to lead a program, or, you know, Swix is dumping this much money in the Chinese skiing.
Yeah.
Pretty, I mean, obviously the Olympics are coming there in 3 years, which seems like no time at all. And they obviously have a really uncanny way of developing, you know, sport specific athletes very quickly. You know, I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they have a lot of people to sort of select from. You know, I'm just kind of like, what, you know, when you sort of took a step back from the race scene there and you were just observing, like, what in your mind, like, what did you think you were seeing in terms of like a nation that still, you know, has very much, you know, like the pride of like, we need to prove ourselves to the world. Like, we are not a developing country. We're a first world nation and we can develop athletes. Like, was that sort of palpable to you? Like what you were seeing?
Yeah. I mean, you can see that they're putting a big effort towards it. And I think that they, you know, I don't know how really internally how it works, but it looks like they have a legit national team and development program, you know, so there's a big group of juniors, boys and girls, and there's a good group of what, you know, I think are senior athletes, you'd call senior athletes, men and women. And they have, you know, they've hired good coaches. Some of these guys I know, from Norway or in Estonia, and they are, a lot of them train in Trondheim. And they are modeling their training after what they see working for other countries, you know? So basically they're kind of like taking the Norwegian model and they are doing that. And, I have no idea like how many kids they have to pull from, for example, like if there's a lot of kids skiing. I mean, I was surprised how many kids there were skiing at like the Vasaloppet. Because they have a kids race, mm-hmm. and they have a, you know, a citizens race, and, you know, there were 800 people there. Right. So,
wow.
That's pretty cool. You know, you see like, I don't know, at least a couple hundred Chinese kids out skiing, which is, you know, and they look like they know what they're doing. They're all wearing race suits and racing skis, and you can tell they've skied before. So, yeah, it was kind of sweet. I mean, it's just probably as big as, well, I don't know. You know, it looks like JOs or something, but,
Right. That's so, yeah, right. Exactly. So I guess what you're saying is like, it looks like the real deal. Like it's club skiing for kids. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, so and I talked to some people, I don't think they don't have a lot of clubs. Like it's not very popular, you know? So they have a few places where there are coaches that coach juniors, and I'm not sure the dynamic between school and government and all that stuff. And it sounds, you know, it's definitely different than what we're used to. I know that the good kids, like the good skiers, are kind of like very heavily encouraged to be a ski racer. I don't really know how that works, but
sure.
I think China has their own methods of saying, hey, like this, you're going to do this. And so I think that's right, how some of them end up there. No.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about the photography and the videography. So I had always wondered, I'm like, I think, is it Ophira Group or how do you pronounce
that?
Yeah,
Ophira, but yeah.
Ophira. Okay, so is that you? Are you sort of the lead behind that?
Yeah, so I got into photography and kind of graphic design and video stuff. And I've been doing that for a long time and, started doing it for different businesses and companies and kind of was doing it just here and there, freelancing stuff. And then a couple years ago, I mean, I was getting more and more requests for my work and, this was like right after I got married. My wife, Jessica, was like, dude, why don't you just do this, you know, for real? So I founded it. It's a marketing agency. It's called Ophira. Founded that like 3 years ago now. And so it was a way for me to kind of, you know, develop myself professionally and learn some new things and make some connections. Well, like while I was skiing. So I was able to work, you know, I was working quite a bit, while I was training and traveling, flexible. So yeah, it's turned into a pretty good-sized little marketing agency. We do a lot of web stuff, search engine optimization. We do marketing. We do ad buying. We do a lot of social media management. Photography is a part of what we do. Video production. So it's been cool because I get to work with companies in the ski industry. Obviously, I know almost everybody in the ski industry and, being able to kind of combine all of that, especially then with, my experience with ski racing. Yeah. So I can, you know, I have a lot of people that love how I'm able to combine, you know, artistic photography and videography and telling that story, in a way that sounds, you know, that sounds like you understand kind of what it takes, and not from like an outside perspective, but almost from an inside perspective kind of. So whether that's through photos or videos or other things like that. So, yeah, it's been really cool and it's growing. So I'm kind of trying to figure out, it's basically a full-time job now. So
I know, I think you guys produced, that piece on Sadie for Fisher. Is that right?
We did. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, stuff so like we, that we is, worked, is, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Worked with Fisher and, worked with Press Forward, which is Andrew Gardner and his team, over there and they're in Vermont and they do a lot of the PR and they've been really awesome to work with and they do a lot of really good work. So yeah, we worked with them on that project. So yeah, that was a really cool one. Got to go up and film Sadie and, you know, kind of tell her story. Cause there's so many layers to it. You know, if you just look at the surface, you don't always get all that. So,
so is that sort of your path moving forward, you know, as you know, whatever skiing looks like for you, you know, whether or not you taper that piece of your life or not, like moving forward is this marketing agency kind of, or your marketing business, kind of your, what you'll throw your energy into in the next year or two or three?
Yeah. So at the moment I'm doing that and, that's yeah. Taking a lot of time and there's a lot of growth opportunities and it's really, really exciting. At the moment I'm also taking 18 credits of, engineering classes. I'm finishing my mechanical engineering degree that I put on hold to go after the Olympics. So I have one more semester after this one until I finish that. So yeah, I'm like full time and a half in engineering school as well. And then I also founded another company this spring, that's kind of a tech, it's a web-based, it's like a tech startup, It's a web platform for global adventure travel. So I'm working on that as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So.
So you're a busy dude.
Yeah. Pretty busy right now. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, at least, I mean, it's interesting. Yeah. Now that I recall, you had texted once, you're like, oh yeah, I'm in class. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. He must still be in school. And mechanical engineering is not exactly like light academics. So that's got to be time consuming as well.
Yeah, it's pretty, I'm basically like, I work in some, either whether it's school or real work, I'm working like probably, you know, I don't know, 12 to 14 hour days, probably every day. And I have to keep moving. And that's all I'm doing right now is, school is definitely full time. Yeah. And so I was doing school part time while I was racing. And I got to the point where I was just like, you know what, if I'm going to give this 100% and I'm going to get to the level that I know I can get to, I won't be able to do like continue taking classes right now. So I put it on pause. So I'm coming back to that kind of with a vengeance. I'm like trying to get it done. everybody's advising me not to take so many classes. And I'm like, if I can possibly do it, I'm going to do it. So,
Good. Yeah. Knock it out. Okay. Anything that you want to add or anything I was like absent-minded about and didn't ask?
I guess. I mean, I feel like I could go off on like meaningless, you know, like ethereal tangents for a while, whether it's the ski culture or results or how we need to get better or all these things. But, no, not really. I mean, the ski community in the U.S. has been so awesome and, you know, it is so awesome. And, it's really fun to, I guess I will say one little short story was just last year at the Olympics in Pyeongchang. Probably one of the coolest experiences of my life was being there right at the finish, you know, when the girls won their gold medal. And it was, I tell this story to some people when they ask me how the Olympics was because, you know, we were all there. The whole cross country team was there. We knew this was kind of the big hurrah, like the big chance, and they were skiing so well in the semi. And so we were all there. And when Jessie crossed, you know, and she had just, they just won that gold medal. You know, everybody was crying and like laughing and hugging each other. And I actually started crying, and it was really weird because, you know, it was like something in a movie, but I started crying. And if you had asked me before the Olympics, like, hey, you know, like what will the coolest part be? You know, you think will you ever cry? You know, I would say, no, like, I mean, I don't, it's rare that something moves me so much that I actually to tears, you know, that I'm crying. And so we were there and it was just like, I started crying. Like it was totally involuntary, and people were crying and hugging each other and dogpiling on each other. And it was weird because it was this sense of like, you know, they had done it, and but it was like we had done it. You know, everybody was like, you just felt like there was this bond, you know, because how many times have I gone to U.S. ski team training camps and skied with the guys and skied with the girls, you know, we're pushing through like the fourth hour of an OD of some crazy canyon and everyone's bonking and I'm skiing with Keegan and it's just like, you know, I mimic her technique and then maybe she mimics my technique or whatever. And this goes on for years and years and years, you know, and with all these different athletes and coaches and we're all there. And it's like, I don't know. It was pretty surreal actually, just to feel like, obviously they both skied out of their minds and they're the ones who skied that course, you know, but it was kind of this like collective feeling in a way that everybody was just like proud that they had played even a tiny part in it. So that was really cool. And I think that that feeling, you know, has, that feeling really kind of made me realize the importance of, you know, sharing that knowledge and experience, you know, the little bit that I've gotten, you know, with other people and the younger athletes, because I think that's how we move forward, you know, is so they don't have to do all that, learn all that stuff themselves, and they can learn it from us, hopefully.
Sure. What's one thing that you have out in your home from the Olympics? I'm just curious. You know, a lot, you hear a lot of people, it's like, oh yeah, I went to the Olympics, whatever. And that stuff's in a box somewhere. Is there something that you have out that's special to you or anything?
My wife keeps, Jessica keeps saying that she's going to make a little display for my bib, my race bib, which I think would be cool. Right now I just have, I have my little home office set up, which is where I'm working. And I stole a sign off the wall in from our condo that we were living in the Athlete Village. And it's just, it's the United States Olympic team crest. And it's the circle with the rings and the flag. And I have that right above my desk, and I still haven't made it look really sweet. I had plans for it, but I haven't yet. But, yeah. So, I mean, anytime I'm like sitting here grinding out some huge long project or like editing video for 7 hours straight, and I'm just like sick of it, you know, I kind of like look up and I think, you know, I mean, the amount of time and energy that I put into that, you know, achieving that goal and the amount of time that it takes to get to that level, you know. And I think in today's, I don't know, society, we think it's going to be so fast, and if it doesn't come right away, then it's not worth it. But, to me, that's just a reminder of like, that's what like 20 years of beating your head against the wall can do.
Well, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it. And I'm glad we connected. I knew it took a while. So thank you. And, let us know if you end up officially retiring.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna,
hold off, but
I'm saying it's like, well, it is, I mean, I'm just doing different stuff. And that's the cool part is I might go try to do some marathons. Like I did, you know, being able to do China and maybe do some marathons, just things like that, that you just can't do when you're on the strict, you know, you're chasing points. So, I feel it's really freeing to literally not care about points anymore. And there's still so many races and high level things that you can do, outside of just like that strict little circuit, whether it's the World Cup or the Super Tour. So, I'm excited about just some new racing opportunities.
Well, thanks. And, appreciate your time. Have a good night.
Yeah. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks for listening.